Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Devin.
And look what you made me do, Devin.
What, start a podcast?
And also recite Taylor Swift.
That's right. Oh, Swifty, come on.
I know, I feel like we need, before we get into, like, the current events of it all, I think we need to have, like, a little convo about Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this, like, rebrand, this new single? Like, what are your thoughts? What are your feelings?
First of all, I always find it a little disingenuous when pop stars are like, oh my god, I'm so, like, sad. Like, I have to rebrand, and, like, the old Taylor's dead. Like, old Taylor made
you... When you say when pop stars do that, you mean when Taylor Swift
does that. And I'm like, bitch, old Taylor Swift made you, like, $100 million. Yeah. Like, calm down.
She's not that dead.
Yeah, you're not that dead.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about Taylor Swift. Most of them negative
at
this point.
Yeah, me too.
There's a lot of things that infuriate me about her, but I realized, I don't know if it's like Game of Thrones last night, you know, the finale, the season finale, but Taylor Swift is like America's Cersei Lannister.
Yeah.
Like, I loathe her,
right.
I fear her, but then I kind of, I don't think respect is the right word, but I'm in awe of her evil genius.
Right, exactly.
Because I was like, well, I was up last night. Couldn't fall asleep. So I was watching all these like YouTube videos of like people unpacking that music video,
right.
And, like, all the references. And I was like, okay, she's kind of vile.
Right.
In the way that Cersei is.
Right. But she's also kind of an evil genius.
She's competent.
Yeah.
Like, she's kind of an evil genius.
Right.
She's very Trumpian in a way now.
Right.
Because her album cover for Reputation.
Uh-huh.
Kind of, it's like her and then like newspaper headlines.
Right.
So it's very much like evoking this like fake news
element,
which is very Trumpian, and I'm like, Taylor Swift is too smart not to realize that.
Oh, 100%.
Like, I just think that Taylor Swift is our Cersei Lannister, which is basically a very competent version of Donald Trump.
No, that's sort of
how I see her.
Yeah, no, it's a good point, and how it's really dangerous in ways, because there is this sort of like respect, maybe is still the wrong word, but this sort of like, oh man,
awe.
Like, I know,
you're in awe a little bit. And you also are a little scared because you're like,
right.
Wow,
whoa.
You're kind of a creative / evil genius.
Absolutely.
And also in her sort of rebrand, like the old Taylor's dead, yada yada yada, like she took it pretty literally. Like, she went and deleted all her old tweets.
Right.
Like, she didn't have an avatar for a while. She deleted all her old Instagram posts. I kind of, like, on that note of like the old Taylor's dead, like, not really. I'm
right.
Like, listen, honey, the North remembers.
Right.
Like, we're not forgetting the old Taylor. Like, she might want to leave her old Taylor in the past,
but
there's so much to contend with there. So
absolutely.
I just have a lot of, like, very complicated...
You have a lot of Swiftie feelings.
I had more Swiftie feelings than I thought I did.
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
I really thought that I wasn't going to think about her that much and didn't really care.
Because I don't really... I mean, the extent of it is I listened to the new single and I was like, meh.
But, like, I think I care because she positioned herself as
yes,
a feminist.
Me too. I mean, that's definitely frustrating.
And I'm, like, you know, there's certain instances of, like, corporate feminism.
Right.
Pop feminism that I think are overblown. Like, people get mad about the Fearless Girl statue or,
right.
like, Wonder Woman. And I'm like, there are some legitimate critiques, but for me, a lot of it is overblown.
But
I'm like, with Swift, I'm like, she literally, that's what she did.
I know.
She profited off of feminism, but it was a very specific brand of feminism, and
right.
she didn't follow through.
Exactly.
And I think that there's, like, no excuse.
Yeah.
In
I hate her, like, girl gang thing. That
well,
was just
but
so...
But that's all part of, like, the
I know.
Old Taylor.
I know.
It's dead. She can't come to the phone right now.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, we took a little T-Swift diversion.
Yes.
We're not going to spend the whole time talking about it. Just some initial thoughts
just
and feelings. We'd love to hear from you Hellions how
yes.
you feel, because I'm sure there's a whole wide range
of strong feelings.
Yeah,
always. Also, pardon my voice, it's a little bit gone from the convention. It literally is I spent like all weekend like I can't.
It's your sexy voice.
It's my sex. I know,
just
that's
like
what my husband
says.
Yeah, I know, he's like, man, it is a sexy voice.
It is
I'm
a
like,
sexy voice. I kind of wish I had it.
I know.
Anyway, let's talk about what we're going to discuss today. So Devin, do you want to take us through
sure.
our topics?
Yes. So block one, as always, is our listener feedback in general. Hellbent HQ updates. Block two is entitled Pardon Me?
With a question mark and an exclamation point.
Yeah.
Because, like, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
And I think you know what that's referring to. That's the pardon of Joe Arpaio, which we alluded to on one of our last podcasts.
Yes.
I can't remember which
I know,
one.
Me neither. They all blend together.
We're going to go into that more in depth.
Yeah. And then we're also going to talk about DACA and Trump's sort of
you know...
There's reports that DACA might end.
Exactly.
So we're going to go into that.
And then how Trump's Twitter rant turned policy about the transgender service member ban is kind of being set in motion. So then block three, we're going to talk about Hurricane Harvey and, you know, what's going on there and sort of the complicated political shit that's going on around it.
Yeah, and how Trump's responded, which, right. Spoiler alert, not great.
Not great.
Actually awful. Really awful.
Yeah, everyone's surprised.
No one's surprised.
No one's surprised. Block four is going to be our gratitude check, as always. Block five, it is Monday, so it's Dick Wad of the Week, and we have a doozy.
Yes.
And then finally, at block six, we have some action items, so things you can do after you listen to the show.
Okay, Devin, so let's get into some listener feedback and then a couple updates on our end. So what's the first bit of feedback we got for our last show?
Okay, so this first piece of feedback is fantastic. Brando tweeted at us, quote, "Devin's pee sound effect on the pod is my everything right now. I love 12-year-old Devin and Sarah." And another listener, John, also DM'd me on Twitter to basically say the same thing. And I aim to please people. Like, 12-year-old us is definitely the best version of us.
I wouldn't say the best version of us,
it's up there.
It's in a power ranking. Top five. And I will also say it's hilarious that I thought that people couldn't hear you do that, because if you notice in the last pod, I'm like, for those who couldn't hear,
right? You like
Devin
explained
did a piss sound, because you did it. I thought very subtly. It was not subtle.
It was not subtle
when it went on the podcast. Anyway, 12-year-old Devin and Sarah, that's probably not the first or the last time.
You will hear from us.
You'll see or hear from us. And then Nayree tweeted, quote, "Quarter way through and I've learned Sarah is a Libra/Scorpio cuss baby like me. Fuck yeah, my fellow diplomatic fierce bitch."
Yeah.
I love that.
That's a really good compliment.
That is, again, another great memoir title. Diplomatic fierce bitch. I can't take it from Nayree, but I like it.
That's a good one.
Like, maybe consider, you know, using that.
But right.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you think that Scorpio and Libra, like, those...
Wouldn't really mix,
but it totally makes sense.
It does.
Because there are a lot of times in my life where I'm very, like, composed and diplomatic, and I try to massage the way I, you know, message things.
Right.
And then other times I'm like, fuck you, fuck this.
Fuck everything.
Fuck everything.
Yeah. We also got a tweet from Teresa. She said, "Devin, collude o'clock is awesome." Merch suggestion, beer koozies with y'all's catchphrases. I really want this for my football tailgate. So we've had this before, feedback before. I can't find anywhere to get them made.
I can't believe that.
I know. I also wine glasses.
There's such a demand for those things. That's very strange.
I know. It's really
upsetting.
We'll
keep looking, but thank you,
yes.
Teresa, for the suggestion.
Yes.
And then Paul emailed us last week about quote-unquote alt-left versus alt-right and sort of the nuances in what is considered the alt-right movement. And we did respond. And his next email was pretty great. He said, quote, "I listened to Monday's pod today and I was happy that you friends addressed the alt-right homogeny debate. I know many people have brought this up, but let me echo them in saying that it's so refreshing to get not only feedback and corrections during the pod, but also these emails back from you. I know you must get a ton of messages and I just want you to know how much I appreciate getting a response, even though you addressed it during the last pod. It's something that is noticeably lacking in almost every news/entertainment outlet I listen to, watch, or read. Thanks again, and keep up the great work." And I will say, Devin and I do try to get back to as many emails as possible.
We do.
Some slip through the cracks.
Yeah.
So we're not batting 1,000.
We're really not, especially the emails from July, because we took a bunch of time off.
I know, there's like a couple starred, and I'm like, Devin?
I know, and I'm like, I know.
But yes, we really do try to get back to everyone. We don't always, but it's something that we like connecting with you friends. And again, I mean, the reason why we do listener feedback, not only does it make us better, we think, but it feels more like a two-way conversation.
Absolutely. And, you know, community was a goal at the outset of this podcast. So I'm really glad that we're actually creating that.
Yeah. That we're sort of doing what we set out to do, for
Absolutely.
Sure. And then some updates on our end. So we'll be sending out our newsletter early next week. You get a bunch of, like, curated articles and reads from us and the list of our latest episodes, as well as, like, sweet, sweet merch deals.
Sweet, sweet merch deals.
So if you're not signed up, you can go to hellbentpodcast.com/newsletter to subscribe. And then Thursday's show is TBD again. Sorry. My headaches keep... they have persisted.
They are resisting my medicine and persisting.
Oh, God. That's like funny, but also sad. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I'm going to try to take it a little easy. Yes. I think I've been pushing myself too hard. So Thursday's episode is TBD. We might actually just have a guest host instead of me. So we're thinking it will likely happen, but just heads up.
Right.
Right now, TBD. And then next week, Monday is Labor Day.
Right.
So we're going to do an episode on Tuesday. So no episode on Monday, but we will have an episode next Tuesday. Okay, Devin, let's get into our first big news block, which is all about the pardon of noted dickwad / racist motherfucker Joe Arpaio.
Right.
So how did this come about? What happened? When did it happen? What are all the fucking details?
Right. So on Friday, which was, let's remember, as the country was gearing up for Hurricane Harvey to hit Texas and Louisiana, Trump goes and pardons, I'm really proud of this name, Darth noted dickwad.
Darth.
Joe Arpaio.
I feel like he doesn't even warrant Darth.
I know.
Because Darth, like Cersei Lannister, like Taylor Swift,
is sort of
kind
like,
of an evil genius.
That's true.
And this guy's just a fucking dickwad.
Dickwad. You're right. You're right. I was still really proud of it, though.
Okay.
That's enough. So we mentioned the possibility of this pardon, I think, on our pod on Thursday.
Yes, we did. Because he was like, there was hints that he might pardon Joe Arpaio. He, like, very much teased it during his rally in Phoenix.
Right, right.
Which, by the way, was part of the area that Joe Arpaio used to be the sheriff of.
Right.
Maricopa County.
Right.
So we all thought it was probably coming, and then it happened on Friday, just as, you know, Hurricane Harvey was hitting.
Right. So quick refresher, Arpaio was the former sheriff of Maricopa County in Arizona.
Right.
And he was convicted of contempt of court in July for detaining people simply because he suspected they were undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, and we talked about this in the last podcast, but in Arizona, Latino residents were 4 to 9 times as likely to be stopped for traffic stops.
Right.
And it's because they were being targeted and profiled illegally.
Right. And because the court said you can't do that.
The court was like, stop this fucking bullshit.
Right.
And they did not.
Exactly. So it was contempt of court that he was convicted of.
Right.
So, I mean, not only is this a steaming pile of racist bullshit to begin with.
Right.
It's also highly unusual from a legal point of view.
I feel like highly unusual is a great way to sum up the Trump presidency.
Right.
And probably too mild. But yeah, there's some really interesting like legal implications right here.
Right. So I'm actually just going to read a tweet from Cecilia Wang. She's the deputy legal director of the ACLU, and she really summed it up beautifully.
Yeah. I mean, she's an expert.
Right.
So we're like, we're just going to quote her.
Let's let her explain this.
Yes.
So she said, quote, to those mansplaining pardons to me, strong open.
I'm just very strong open. And just another indication that the higher you rise, the more you'll probably be mansplained to.
Right.
Because those mansplainers are very threatened by your expertise.
Exactly.
So I love that. God, she's like the deputy fucking legal director of the ACLU, and she has to like be like, okay, first of all, mansplainers, shut the fuck up.
Right, right, right. God. That's like the female astronaut who was literally mansplained to on Twitter. It's a whole thing. It's a whole separate thing.
Yeah, I mean, that happens a lot to women. Like,
yeah.
They're like, I have a PhD in this field. Also, you're just a random dude on Twitter. Right. I know more than you.
Exactly.
God, story of our lives.
I know. So anyway, so she said, yes, the president has the power to pardon. And a pardon of Arpaio would undermine the rule of law. Both things are true.
Right.
Under ordinary pardon rules, there is a 5-year waiting period.
Which I didn't know.
Right. So that's because ordinarily pardons are given if evidence shows there was a wrongful conviction or the passage of time shows an extraordinary record of rehabilitation by the person convicted. Okay.
That would not appear to be Joe Arpaio.
No.
He was convicted of contempt of court.
Right.
And he wasn't even sentenced yet.
Right. So that she goes into this. So also, ordinarily, the Justice Department's Office of the Pardon attorney makes recommendations to the president after a person applies. Trump's promised pardon of Arpaio flouts all those rules.
Of course.
And Arpaio's conviction was for criminal contempt of court. Arpaio hasn't even been sentenced yet.
Right.
And he was convicted based on testimony from his own former attorney and subordinate commanders. Those witnesses, Arpaio's own people, testified that Arpaio deliberately set about violating a court order, a federal court order that prohibited Arpaio from illegally detaining people, including a member of the Latino plaintiff class. The criminal conviction of Arpaio is just a conviction.
Justice was served, essentially. Right.
Coming after he repeatedly violated the U.S. Constitution and our orders. So there are good reasons for the pardon power, but a pardon here is a handshake with racists and a middle finger to the rule of law.
Yeah.
Strong clothes, too.
And I've also seen that, I think, from congressmen.
Yes.
I think, I have to double check, but I think Chris Murphy essentially said a similar thing.
Yeah, he'd be the one.
Yeah, so... You know, in short, the pardon completely ignores ordinary pardon procedures. Mm-hmm. And sort of like once more and with feeling,
right.
Democratic norms rely on good faith actors. And like Olivia said in your Patreon episode, the Constitution is not self-reinforcing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So a lot of it sort of comes down to people actually using the powers of checks and balances.
Right, right.
Which we know this Republican Congress won't do. But yeah, it's just like, it's not written down in law.
Right.
It was just kind of like a norm. Trump's like, I don't have to fucking do this.
Right.
So yeah, there's no law that requires the president to consult with the DOJ before issuing clemency.
Right.
And yeah, normally a person has to actually apply for a pardon through the DOJ. And then the DOJ makes recommendations to the president. And this did not happen at all.
Mm-mm.
Like, I don't even think the DOJ knew he was going to pardon Arpaio.
No.
He just did it,
right. There are also a few more interesting issues around pardons and what this means moving forward.
Yeah, and especially related to Joe Arpaio.
Right.
Because this, again, is a very unique, is probably not strong enough word,
right.
But a unique case.
Right.
And, again, goes outside the norms in a lot of different ways.
Right. So Soledad O'Brien pointed out on Twitter, quote, note, acceptance of a pardon is an admission of guilt and can be used in civil suits.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. And then to that end, a pardon only extends to federal crimes.
Right.
David Neer.
I think it's David Neer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The political director of Daily Coast tweeted, quote, it's now up to state prosecutors in Arizona to bring Arpaio to justice. Trump can't pardon state crimes.
It's also worth noting that both senators from Arizona spoke out against this pardon. Jeff Flake was not as strong as John McCain, but they both came out against it. So, like, even members of Trump's own party, and I believe that Paul Ryan, through a spokesman, came out against it, which is kind of fucking wimpy, ask me. But yeah, like this, just to give you another sense of how outside of the norms in so many ways this pardon is, I mean, no one really agrees with it.
Right.
Except these hardcore racist motherfuckers. Like Trump.
Right. And as New York Times' Nicholas Kristof mused, quote, I wonder if the Arpaio pardon tests the waters for pardons of Mike Flynn, Jared Kushner's, and others caught up in the Russia investigation.
Yeah.
Which is a super interesting point.
And I've also seen Adam Schiff raise a similar point. So he's the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. And yeah, it's definitely something that I wonder about as well. Like, if indeed Arpaio is a sort of trial balloon for pardoning other political allies, like, what does that mean for Russia? Because remember, just last month, the Washington Post reported that Trump had asked his advisors about his power to pardon aides, family members, and even himself in connection with the Russia probe.
Right.
So this is not outside of the realm of possibility.
Oh, right. No, like, not at all.
This is something that he's literally been asking about.
Right. And this is sort of a...
Because this is normal.
Right. This is totally normal.
Super normal.
Because, yeah, I mean, this is really... It is an interesting sort of test case, right? For Trump to use is sort of like, how far does this power extend? And now news just dropped. We were not planning on talking about this.
Always updating our outlines.
Always updating. So a business associate of Trump... Felix Sater, who has a very interesting backstory that we do not have time to get into.
He's on the whiteboard.
We'll
just say that. He's on Devin's whiteboard.
Yes. So he sent a series of emails to Michael Cohen, who's Trump's lawyer, on...
Is he the Says Who guy?
Yes. That's the Says Who guy.
The polls. All of them.
So...
Okay, so Felix Sater sent a bunch of emails to Michael Cohen, who's Trump's lawyer.
Right.
And I guess he wanted to sort of help broker a deal to build a Trump Tower in Moscow.
Right.
And he said that he could do it with the help of Putin.
Right. And so, and then in an, on an email dated November 3rd, 2015, and remember, Trump announced his bid for presidency in June 2015.
So this was already into his campaign.
Into his campaign. He said, Felix Sater said, quote, "Our boy can become president of the USA and we can engineer it. I will get all of Putin's team to buy in on this. I will manage the process."
How much more fucking obvious could it be?
It's like, crystal fucking clear.
I'm just like, at what point are we like, they fucking colluded?
Right?
Or like, they clearly were working in tandem in some way.
So you have to think.
Like, he literally said, "I will get all of Putin's team to buy in on this. Right. I will manage this process."
So you really have to think.
And we, like, can engineer it.
Trump is really wondering, like, how far this pardon process goes for a reason.
Sort of on a Russia-related note, an interesting question was raised by the Lawfare podcast. So would a government shutdown affect the Mueller probe?
Right.
And Susan Hennessy of Lawfare said, "Only to the extent it disrupts the rest of the DOJ, but I see no reason to think Mueller's team would be exempt from a shutdown."
That's super interesting.
Super interesting, because as we know,
right,
Trump has threatened, he's already threatened a shutdown if he doesn't get funding for his hashtag fucking wall.
Right.
And, but I also wonder if he's motivated to shut the government down to also impede the Mueller investigation.
Which, so, I mean, this is just so Trump, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wants to shut down the whole government, hurt that so many people.
Yeah, he's only interested
right,
in himself.
In himself, right, for his own.
He's the president of the United States, allegedly. The right. occupant of the White right. House, really.
Right.
And he's supposed to care about the American people, and he doesn't.
And he doesn't.
All he does is care about himself. And when we get into the Hurricane Harvey coverage, we'll see pretty plain and clear.
Right.
If you haven't already seen, like, right. the last 2 years of him running for president and now being supposedly president.
Right. Well, and then, so Sarah alluded to this earlier, but for more in-depth information on pardons, I sat down with our fellow Hellion Liv on Patreon.
Yeah.
To talk about some complex constitutional law issues.
Yeah.
And including the pardon and how it works.
Yeah.
So for a deep dive from a very smart, funny lawyer who knows her shit, that interview on Patreon is definitely worth a listen.
It's my favorite thing that we've done.
Yeah.
I was no part of it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Yeah. I thought it was a great interview.
It was good.
So let's talk about some more sort of complexities right. around this pardon.
Of course, because there's always more.
There's always more.
Right.
There's always both. There's always more.
There's always more.
So reportedly, Trump first went to hashtag noted racist dickwad,
right.
Jefferson Beauregard fucking Sessions, to ask about dropping the federal prosecution this spring
right.
against Arpaio. So he actually went to Sessions and was like, hey, can you look the other way? Can you drop this shit?
Right.
And
sound familiar?
It sounded very familiar. Very familiar. And Sessions said it would be inappropriate to do so. So even Sessions was like, man, this is too far for me.
Right.
Which,
look at your life. Look at your choices. If Sessions is being like, I can't do this.
This is too unethical for me.
Yeah.
There's something deeply wrong.
Right.
Deeply,
right.
Which we already knew.
Right.
So basically, that's kind of part of, I think, why he pardoned Arpaio, because he couldn't get Sessions to run
right.
interference. And again, like Devin said, does this sound familiar? This is what fucking Trump tried to do with Comey and Flynn.
Right.
He tried to get Comey to back off some sort of Flynn investigation. And Comey's like, I cannot do that, you fucking dickwad. Which she did not say. That's just
paraphrasing.
My Comey translation. But yeah, so it's like, this is obstruction of justice again.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like this whole era is me gaslighting myself because things are so
yes.
obvious. I'm like, am I allowed to say that this is what it is?
Yeah.
Like, legally?
Like, wait. This is too simple.
This
like,
is too obvious.
Yeah.
Right? But it's
absolutely.
Like, that's got to be obstruction of justice. And, you know, let's remember what former Attorney General Eric Holder said on Twitter, just to put it in more context. So what did he say, Devin?
He said, quote, "Number of times over 6 years that President Obama called and asked me to think about dropping a case. Zero.
Zero. The entire time he was Attorney General. In 6 months of this administration, we've already heard about two high-profile things. We don't even know the other ones he's probably run in or tried to run interference
right,
on.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just, again, another, I think, example of Trump being just completely politically abnormal.
Right.
And the fact that he's still allowed to do all this stuff, again, is showing that Republicans aren't really meaningfully willing to use the powers of Congress to check him.
Right.
That's, to me, the most vile part about this presidency is that Republicans refuse to meaningfully check him.
Right, he's allowed to run rampant.
They tweet out, like, thoughts and prayers and concerns and are privately wincing and what have you.
Right.
I'm like, do fucking something.
Do something, yeah.
Do something.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, too, that Trump sort of saw Arpaio as, like, sort of political brethren.
Yeah.
If you will.
Absolutely.
We talked about this on the last pod, but, like, they are both, like, birther conspiracy theorists in arms.
Yeah, absolutely. And they kind of started this birther thing together.
They were both, like, very high profile fuelers.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe not together, but it was definitely them who put it into the spotlight. So, and interestingly, I found this interesting, an interview on Saturday, Arpaio said about the birther sort of conspiracy, quote, "There was no collusion with Trump.
What?
I started my birth certificate investigation around the same time he did his."
He literally said the word collusion.
Yes.
Freudian slip.
I know. So, and that was, like, unprompted. Like,
oh,
it was,
my gosh.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, a kid who is holding up an empty cookie jar.
Right.
And said, "There were no cookies in this jar."
Not, like, I didn't eat any. They were just never,
like,
there.
But I can see it clearly.
Right, right.
You know what I also saw on Twitter this morning?
Hmm.
Apparently, Arpaio was thinking about running for Senate in primarying, like, Jeff Flake, I think, maybe.
Good luck.
Well, but people are like, let's not take this as a joke.
I know, it's not a joke.
Because a lot of people took fucking Trump as a joke and he became president. So
I
it's
know.
Like, we gotta stamp this racist motherfucker
out
of public life. I mean, he lost his sheriff's, you know, re-election campaign in 2016. So I would hope that Arizona would, if he does run, would reject him. But you never know.
You never
gotta,
know.
Like, be vigilant. Okay, so sort of beyond the legal ramifications of this pardon, you know, I think at the end of the day, it is a presidential pardon of blatant racism.
It really is.
And xenophobia.
Oh, 100%. There was actually a really great piece on Slate by Mark Joseph Stern, and he kind of summed this up beautifully. He said, quote, "What Maricopa County experienced under Arpaio's reign was law enforcement by white nationalism, plain and simple.
Right.
In the name of cracking down on undocumented immigrants, Arpaio brutalized and terrorized thousands of Latinos, including tourists, legal residents, and U.S. citizens. Under Arpaio's regime, those suspected of having Hispanic heritage were deprived of their constitutional rights and subjected to monstrous cruelty. His office engaged in a years-long effort to systematically purge Latinos from the country." So, you
from
know,
the county.
From the county,
and,
excuse
and
me.
Essentially, probably the, from the country. Yeah.
So, I mean, Trump can say whatever the fuck he wants, but he literally just pardoned institutional racism and, again,
yeah,
and sidestep the court's effort to check it. I mean, he can fuck right off as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and also it's interesting because, like, the courts have been the greatest check on Trump thus far.
Right.
So it also seems to me like he's trying to show that the courts can't fully stop his, like, dickwatery either. Because that's been, in a lot of ways, the most powerful pushback against him. So I think it's, like, him kind of lashing out in that way as well.
Right.
And yeah, it's just, I mean, we talked about how awful Joe Arpaio was in our last podcast. I mean, he literally joked, quote unquote, about this outdoor jail facility known as Tent City.
Yeah.
He literally joked about it being concentration camps.
Like, right.
This is the level of vile that this human being is. And this is who the president of the United States decided was worthy of a pardon.
And not just a pardon, but a pardon that flouts all the rules.
Yeah. And also, it's happening mere weeks after Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Like,
it's really signaling something.
But, like, you can't meaningfully say you're against racism.
Right.
You know, which Trump tried to do, like, but failed,
failed
after
miserably.
Charlottesville. And then do this.
Right.
There's just, your actions speak for themselves, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so speaking of institutionalized racism and bullshit, let's talk about the DACA news that also dropped on Friday evening in the middle of a fucking hurricane.
Right.
Which we'll get to the hurricane coverage.
Right.
Again, this hurricane happened. He pardons Arpaio. This news of DACA possibly ending drops.
Mm-hmm.
And also the news of the trans military service member ban going through also drops. So that's, again, the level of vile that Trump is.
Right. He's like, ooh, I'm going to use the hurricane to drop all this shit.
Ugh.
So, you know, again, just, I want to start this section on DACA by saying that this is a great example of
don't listen to what they say, watch what they do.
Right.
Because Trump went on and on about having a big heart yes. and dealing with this issue sensitively, but ultimately we all knew that that was a load of bullshit.
Yeah, because he even, like, made references to, like, Dreamers. And yes. how he, like, doesn't want to end the program because, like, yeah, because you said, like, he has a big heart.
Right.
But that's, like you said, a crock of bullshit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think for a while people have been worried that DACA might come to an end.
Right.
And I think after this news, it feels like not a question of if, but when.
Right.
Because, you know, people familiar with the issue say that Trump is essentially deciding whether just to cancel the program altogether outright or just let it lapse.
Right.
And, you know, just FYI, DACA has protected 800,000 young people from prosecution.
Yeah.
Like, it's affecting a lot of people.
Right, right. Where's your big fucking heart now?
Nowhere.
Nowhere.
Absolutely nowhere.
Right. So, Vanita Gupta, director of the Leadership Conference on Human Rights, and she was also the former head of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division under Obama.
Yeah.
She said, quote, "It would be a grave moral and legal error. Killing the DACA program as the Trump administration's first post-Charlottesville move would be absolutely shameful. We must not allow the hate violence that we saw on the streets of Charlottesville to become the guiding force for policymaking."
Yeah.
And I think that was always the fear. You know?
I mean, again, like, say what you will about Democrats. There's so much to critique with Democrats.
Yeah.
But there, you cannot look at everything Trump has been doing in the first 6 or 7 months of his administration and tell me that there is no meaningful difference between Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
Trust me, Obama was not perfect on immigration. He was known as the deporter in chief for a reason.
Right.
But then we also had programs like DACA that helped people. And now they want to, you know, we talked about this in the last podcast. So many things we're saying is undo Obama era rule, roll back Obama era funding. That's the theme of a lot of these stories.
Right.
And so, you know, we're fighting to keep the progress that was made in place.
Yeah. And really, I think this point that Vanita Gupta just made, coupled with this pardon of Arpaio,
right,
it really makes it clear that this so-called president is going out of his way to legislate racist policies.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even like a wink and a nod.
No.
It's a full-on, like,
this is what we're doing.
This is what we're doing. And,
you
know, not only is ending DACA immoral,
right,
in my opinion.
Yeah.
It is also bad for the economy, as these policies usually are.
Bigoted
policies are usually bad for the economy.
Right?
It's really, and again, so Mark Veazey, who's a congressman from Fort Worth, he wrote back in January, quote, "If Trump does indeed remove Texas's 120,000 DACA recipients from the workforce, the Texas economy would lose $6.1 billion annually." And that's according to the Center for American Progress. And they would also lose overnight the services provided by 100,000 workers in Texas.
Yeah.
So it's just not good for the economy.
It's not.
If you want to look at it in purely economic terms, it's terrible.
Right.
If you're not a moral person.
Right. Exactly. And apparently, so this like push to end DACA has been spurred by 10 state AGs and the governor of Iowa,
yeah,
who sent a letter demanding that the program be phased out, or else they would bring a case against the courts.
They would try to repeal DACA via the court system.
Right, exactly.
So they're kind of trying to, you know, push Trump to do it quickly.
Right. And fun fact, all the signatures on the letter are Republicans.
Of course.
Later.
I mean, again, there is a meaningful difference between Republicans and Democrats. Democrats ain't perfect. There's plenty to critique about Democrats. Don't get us wrong, but they're not pulling shit like this. And
right,
even Nancy Pelosi said, you know, because there's people worrying that Trump is using DACA as like a bargaining chip to try to get funding for his wall. And Nancy Pelosi said outright, DACA is not negotiable. They will not be a bargaining chip.
Right.
And then finally, you know, just a quick note, we sort of referenced this, but Trump's, like Devin said, Twitter rant turned policy about banning transgender service members from the military is being set in motion. So Trump signed a presidential memo on Friday, or at least we learned about it on Friday.
Right.
Which gives James Mattis 6 months to figure out how to remove transgender troops and stop accepting new transgender recruits. And then also, according to the new policy, the new rules will be in full effect by March 23rd, 2018.
Right.
So this is moving very fast.
Yeah. And, you know, we discussed the details of this policy in our last podcast, and we just would like to remind everyone that this is horrifying.
Yeah, we remain horrified.
We remain horrified.
I mean, again, kind of like what we said with DACA, and right. this is similar with the trans ban, a lot of these immoral, bigoted policies are really bad policies.
Right.
They end up being really bad, either for the economy or for the essential way that agencies or institutions run.
Right.
I mean, we talked about this in our last podcast, but transgender people are twice as likely to sign up for the military as the general population.
Right.
So it's like, this is literally, no one wins.
Right.
No one wins with this policy. Everyone loses, especially people in the trans community. And it is bigoted. It is immoral. It makes zero policy sense in any capacity.
Right.
And Lambda Legal has actually committed to taking Trump to court over this. So we'll have some action items related to that at the end of the show.
Okay, Sarah, so let's talk about Hurricane Harvey and the sort of non-response from the Trump administration.
Yeah, so we wanted to talk about a lot of the issues that are around it, and we sort of alluded to it in our previous section because we were talking about things that happened while Hurricane Harvey was starting to hit, you know, Texas and Louisiana, and Trump was busy doing other things.
Right.
Pardoning a racist motherfucker, possibly signaling that he's going to end DACA, instituting a ban on trans people in the military, like just everything that a national leader should not do during a crisis.
A crisis.
Or ever. Especially during a natural disaster.
No, it's so true.
Okay, so Trump and Governor Abbott from Texas declared a state of emergency ahead of the storm hitting. And Houston is facing catastrophic flooding. I mean, I was watching some of the news around it. And getting really emotional because there was lots of stories of people saving each other. But yeah, weather services say it's historic and that Harvey could total over 50 inches in Texas.
Yeah, and heavy rains have spread to Louisiana, including New Orleans.
Yeah, and you know what people were reminding me on Twitter was that a lot of people from Hurricane Katrina who got displaced relocated to Houston.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's kind of like trauma all over again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which really, really hit me in the gut.
Yeah.
And at least 8 states have offered some sort of resources so far. And this is according to the Texas governor. So that includes Nebraska, Tennessee, Utah, California, Missouri, Ohio, Arizona, and New York.
So let's stick a pin in that because we're going to circle back to why that's important.
Yeah.
And then at least 6 people have died as a result of the flooding.
I saw from the New York Times that it was 5. I saw from Slate that it was at least 6. We don't really have an accurate count,
right.
But there have been fatalities. And again, this is an emergency, and we'll get into Trump's horrific responses soon, but this is a really serious situation.
Yeah. So first, I want to talk about how 2 weeks ago,
yeah,
Trump signed an executive order that revoked Obama-era flood protection standards.
Of course he fucking did.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about that. So many of the stories we talk about is revoke, rolls back.
Right.
You know, takes funding away from Obama-era. Like, I think, honestly, I think his whole presidency is about trying to undo the legacy of Obama.
Absolutely.
I think that's the whole point of his presidential run, his presidency, besides all the attention that he wanted.
Right, right. But I think truly, that's why people were voting for him.
Of course.
It was backlash.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this just happened 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
And of course, this happens. Right.
Of course. So Obama's original executive order, which was from January 2015, was designed to ensure that federal investments located near floodplains would be resilient in the face of climate change. So translation, you know, we want to make sure that we're ready
and
for
prepared.
And prepared for flooding.
Because climate change is a thing.
Right.
As much as you try to deny it, it's a thing. We're seeing it. It's happening. We need
right.
to be prepared.
Right.
And this is also in line with Trump's proposed budget.
Right.
Which would cut $661 million from FEMA grants that are designed to improve disaster preparedness. $90 million in FEMA grants for pre-disaster mitigation efforts. And then all $190 million from National Flood Insurance Program's flood hazard mapping and risk analysis program efforts to improve and redraw the nation's flood maps to align with current sort of realities.
Right.
As a result, probably, of climate change.
Right. So, you know, I think we should just all keep denying climate change because this is super fun.
Okay, so now that Texas is in a state of emergency, it has asked for federal funds to support disaster relief efforts. But let's take a stroll down memory lane and revisit who didn't vote to send emergency funds for Hurricane Katrina or Hurricane Sandy. So what sort of pattern did we find
here? What do we think here? So in 2005, which was Hurricane Katrina, 11 people voted no on disaster relief funds for Katrina, which, I mean, 11 people, that's a lot of people to be like, nah, mm-hmm. we're not going to send them money. But anyway, they were all Republican, and at least one, Barton, was from Texas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And in 2015, 180 people voted no on disaster relief funds for Sandy.
Right.
179 of the 180 people who voted no were Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And at least 20 of them were from Texas. And so, you know, we talked about, like, what states want to pitch in. Although, I don't know, is that, like, state legislatures?
Yeah, so we're pitching in.
Okay, but this is, like,
federal funding.
Federal funding. So these are representatives from states who are... who have denied federal funding for other disasters.
Right.
And, you know, Twitter user Pay Resist, he summed it up really nicely. He said, quote, New York congressman will vote for Harvey aid after Texas congressman voted against Sandy aid. Is Cruz ashamed of using, quote unquote, New York values as an insult?
Yeah.
So essentially saying, you know, these New York congressmen will vote for Harvey, but they didn't get that same, you know, courtesy in return from
right.
these, from some Texas representatives.
Right, right.
And it, again, I feel like this is one of the reasons why people hate government. Like, this kind
yes.
of partisanship. There should not be partisanship in the face of disaster.
Right. This should be the most nonpartisan issue there is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and because, of course, he did, Trump used Hurricane Sandy to harass President Obama about birtherism.
Yeah, another stroll down memory lane. So he tweeted, quote, because of the hurricane, I'm extending my $5 million offer for President Obama's favorite charity until 12 p.m. on Thursday. And then, so basically he meant if Obama, you know, produced additional documents on top of his birth certificate, because apparently Trump still didn't believe him,
mm-hmm.
Trump would pony up and donate to charity because Trump is trash.
Right.
Like, you could just donate that money to relief funding because you're a good person.
Right.
That's an option.
Right, right,
but no,
right.
he used Hurricane Sandy as an excuse to harass Obama.
And we know that he wouldn't have actually donated that money to charity.
Well, I mean, there are stories of him, wasn't there like a cancer charity that
yes.
he like literally took money from?
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of stories about the like Trump
charity
and
yeah. So not only would he probably not have donated, but he probably would have done something even more fucked up.
Right. So
I mean, he used a hurricane as an excuse to harass Obama about
right.
birtherism. So we know he's trash.
He's trash.
Just another example of him being trash.
Would you like some more examples of Trump and his administration being trash?
Sock it to me, Devin.
So on Sunday, in the aftermath of some of the worst of this storm, Trump tweeted, quote, I will also be going to a wonderful state, Missouri, that I won by a lot in 16. Dem CM is opposed to big tax cuts. Republican will win S.
I don't even know what that means.
Nope, I don't either. But if you're wondering what this has to do with anything, welcome to the party, because it does not.
Yeah, again, we're in the middle of a really horrific natural disaster, and one of the first things Trump does is brag about how he won Missouri really big.
Yeah, there's no pivot, y'all.
There's no pivot. There's no empathy. There's no nothing.
Nope.
There is nothing. I cannot believe journalists are still saying this is the best we've seen of Trump.
I
like
know.
This is a new President Trump. Like, do yourself a favor and slap yourself in the face before you say something like that. I don't want to hear any of that. I mean, I think I said that on Twitter. I was like, if I hear one more person say that this is a new President Trump, or this is the day Trump became president, I will fucking lose it.
Lose it.
It's never going to happen.
I know. And the thing is, because that wasn't even the only inappropriate thing that he tweeted
oh,
about.
Oh, no.
That was just the one that I thought was funniest because it didn't make any sense.
And by funny, we mean awful.
We mean awful.
Because he's awful.
Right.
But, like, he also tweeted out that people should buy the other awful sheriff that we can think of in America.
Right.
David Clark's new book.
Right.
In the middle of a fucking hurricane.
Right, right.
Literally, that's where his priorities are.
Yep, yep. And as Angus Johnson noted on Twitter on
Johnston. Yeah.
Noted on Twitter on Sunday, Trump has tweeted about the storm 23 times so far. Not one word of advice about how people can protect themselves or help others.
Yes. And, like, then, like, Obama tweeted something. Like, he quote-tweeted a Red Cross tweet
yes.
and was like, you know, like, this is how you can help, right. And like, this is Americans being Americans, something like that. And I was like, I literally forgot what a real precedent sounded like.
I know.
Like. I was like, what? We had that at one point?
All Trump was saying too was like, biggest storm in history, great response.
He literally was having, and I don't have a better term for this, but like a dick measuring contest.
Yes. Like, with other hurricanes? I don't even know.
He was like, this is the biggest and the best hurricane. And it's like, people are dying. Yeah. You asshole.
You asshole.
And like Angus Johnson noted, like, there was nothing helpful or empathetic, right. essentially, about anything he tweeted about the storm.
Right.
And he was also tweeting about other things like how much he won in Missouri and that you should buy a book, which is probably a violation of some ethics laws.
Oh, you know,
we don't do ethics anymore, apparently.
We just don't. That's just not a thing anymore.
It's just not a thing. Again, should be a thing still. Apparently not a thing. One of the most awful stories I saw was from BuzzFeed. They reported that ICE had left 50 women and children stranded at a bus station before Harvey hit.
Yeah.
Which this just like really, really makes my stomach sick.
Yes. So they apparently service was canceled due to the impending storm. The bus service.
The bus service.
And so ICE just dropped them off and left them there.
They just left them there.
And so most were asylum seekers from Central America. So a little bit of context. ICE routinely drops off families who pass their credible fear interviews at bus stations with tickets to relocate. And while their immigration cases move through the courts.
Gotcha.
So
they usually drop them off at a bus station so they can go wherever they need to go.
Right.
Like near family or right. sponsors or whatever. But, like, you don't do that in the middle of a fucking hurricane.
Well, especially
like,
because...
take them to shelter.
Right. Well, especially because Democratic Rep Lloyd Doggett, who represents San Antonio, had called Immigration Services the day before to tell them not to drop families off,
yeah.
specifically.
Yeah, so Barbie Hudarto, who's a community organizer with RACES, a nonprofit that provides legal aid to immigrant families, said, quote, "Knowing that, they just dropped them off. These are women and children who have been released from family detention with no money, no cell phones, and they don't speak English." Like, and you're dropping them off in the middle of a storm.
Yeah.
And they don't have resources. They don't have, you know, the lay of the land. They don't have necessarily a way to figure out how to get help.
Right, right. Well, and their good news is that these immigrants were taken in by a local church and none were harmed.
Yeah, so they did end up getting to safety, but it shouldn't have even happened in the first place.
Not at all.
Like, I just, how do you not have the humanity to see that? Okay, Devin, so let's get into our gratitude checks,
yes.
which we know we always need. So what are you grateful for today?
So I read this Bell Hooks interview with Bust. It's an older interview,
yeah.
but reading it again just like warmed my cold feminist heart.
She's great.
She is great. So she talks about kind of the state of the resistance movement and how we all move forward under Trump, which felt, I don't know, very apropos in this moment.
And necessary.
So I read this passage and it made me cry just a little bit.
Aww.
Just like soft tears.
Yeah, soft tears.
Quote.
Softly cascading
exactly.
tears.
Exactly. Quote. It is absolutely evident that so much of the anti-Hillary Clinton campaign was rooted in misogyny and woman-hating, and that in many ways she became a symbolic representation of feminism. So many patriarchal men, especially white men, really felt like feminism had taken something from them. And I think for those groups of people, Hillary Clinton losing was a sense of victory.
Yeah.
Like they were getting some patriarchal power back. But patriarchy has no gender. There were many, many women who did not support Hillary Clinton or vote for her. We can't see this as being about one individual male misogynist and hater, but the whole structure of our society. Masses of people really hate and fear empowered women.
Yes. She says it so beautifully.
So beautifully. And I think that a big part of, like, reading that and, like, feeling that was the takeaway that, yeah, patriarchy isn't just about
one
dickwad
person.
Men
mm-hmm.
or one or a group of people. It's about, it's an entire institutional system
mm-hmm.
and that system is
we're all
not being discussed.
We're all kind of cogs in that machine. And
right.
We have to figure out a way to fix the machine.
Yeah, internalized misogyny is real,
yeah.
y'all.
I mean, and also it reminds me too of Rebecca Traister
mm-hmm.
has said about Hillary Clinton. And Rebecca Traister is one of my favorite writers. And part of why I love her is because I find that her takes on gender are nuanced.
Right.
Very nuanced. She has the kind of nuanced discussions that I wish we all could have. But she also, she makes good faith critiques.
Yes.
On Hillary Clinton. And right. they often come from the left.
Right.
But, you know, so I don't always necessarily agree with all of her critiques, but I know they come from good faith.
Right.
So I really appreciate her. But I remember her saying something like, if this is only about hating Hillary Clinton, then why is she the only one that has ever been nominated for
right.
president? So Hillary Clinton is singular because she is Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Because there's only been one woman. So it's not about one woman, like Bell Hooks said. It's about this whole system that has only produced one female presidential nominee.
Right.
So that's why when men say, you know, I knew she wasn't the right candidate. Like,
right.
In my gut, I knew she wasn't. I'm like, A, no one fucking cares what you think.
Right. No one asked you.
No one asked you. It wasn't up to you. It was up to the primary voters.
Right.
They chose her.
Right.
So
by a lot.
Your opinion is not matter as much as the millions of people who chose her.
Nope.
But two, it just is this perfect illustration of why we've never had a female president.
Right.
I mean, no woman is ever the right candidate.
Right candidate, you know, to something.
The fact that you think that the first woman who ran, who was perhaps the most qualified person to ever run for president, arguably speaking, the fact that you are saying that this heavily credentialed woman wasn't the right one is just shows how we're never the right candidate. Women
exactly.
are never right. We're expected to be perfect.
Right.
I mean, this is a whole side tangent that I
well no 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 but it's absolutely true and
yeah.
I mean I think back to the piece he wrote
flawed
and you know how flawed is the enemy of or good is the enemy of
perfect is the
thank
enemy
you.
Of the good
thank you
yeah and so flawed for me was this like insidious reminder
Word.
Of the perfection that the world does expect from women because you know in this article I just basically argued that flawed was attached to Clinton at all times
because right.
we can't accept the fact that a woman can be flawed and beloved
and
worthy
of things,
being president,
right?
Like, we don't allow women to be.
Yeah, that. And Bell Hooks also talked about, you know, even these sort of benevolent patriarch figures.
Yes.
Like Bill Clinton and even Barack Obama.
Yeah, she referenced those two people.
Yeah, where it's like they're the, quote, patriarchal men we can love.
Yeah.
You know, but they still have this sort of, like, underlying...
They're still problematic.
Oh,
there's
absolutely.
Still things that are problematic, but... For them, at least Barack Obama, for sure, we
yeah.
can say that he had some good intent.
Oh, 100%.
So they're the benevolent people.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a really interesting concept.
Right. And reading this whole interview again was a kind of catharsis
yeah.
in a way. It's not...
It's validating.
It's validating.
Because you don't see a lot of that in media.
Yeah, and we not it's not often that someone just comes out and says, we need to talk about feminism and we need to understand that we can be upset.
Yeah.
And that she, quote, the ruthless personification of the patriarchy was elected over the instead of a qualified, thoughtful candidate who just happened to be a woman.
Right.
So, I don't know, just reading that really was kind of a catharsis and made me, I don't know,
yeah.
think and feel good.
I
so.
Mean, and I feel like, I mean, I'm getting into a side tangent, but that's a big part of why we created this podcast.
100%.
We felt like this point of view was not reflected enough.
Right.
Especially in political media that is so heavily dominated by white men and, you know, it's... I just think about the fact that we haven't even been able to... People don't let us have conversations about sexism.
Right.
As it relates to Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Because they want to believe sexism didn't really have anything to do with it.
Right.
So that's how
just,
I know...
I just didn't trust her.
That's how I know sexism is alive and well. Is because
right.
it's so deeply embedded and layered into every fabric of society that people don't even notice it. And then they tell us we're not allowed to talk about it because
right.
it's not really there.
Right.
So it's this like whole cyclical, vicious cycle. So yeah, I love that we have this space where we can have these conversations.
Yes.
So I love that gratitude check.
Yes. And then my second one is a silly one.
Yes.
You know, every once in a while, there are so many good things politically happening, but sometimes you just need a silly one, right?
Yeah.
So this one was 10 cocktails inspired by female authors.
Oh, I saw this.
It was so fun.
The illustrations were beautiful.
Beautiful. It was super fun.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what it sounds like. And bonus, each drink recipe comes with a list of the notable works by the author. So you have a reading list. And a BevMo shopping list. It's like my two favorite things in one article.
I love that. And I will also say, as someone who doesn't drink at least anymore because of my headaches,
right.
I'm like, I gotta make like the virgin
yeah,
versions
absolutely.
Of these drinks.
A lot of them just sound straight delicious.
Delicious.
But my favorite was the Virginia Wolf cocktail.
Nice.
Which is 2 ounces of gin, 4 ounces of sparkling lemonade, a slice of cucumber, and a slice of lime.
Nice.
Sounded lovely.
Do you know what I'm assuming it's some sort of Virginia Wolf book.
But yes,
that is
yes.
paired with that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I just thought that was so fun.
Again, we will have show notes.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll put it up on the website.
Yes. Okay, so that's it for me. So, Sarah, what are you grateful for today?
Well, it wouldn't be a gratitude check for me if I wasn't grateful for more federal judges in Texas.
I can't believe it. I can't believe that this is what you're grateful for, like, every single time.
I mean, my love affair with the independent judiciary in the Lone Star State continues.
Continues.
Like, it's just blossoming. So you might remember last week that I shared a story about a federal judge striking down Texas's bullshit voter ID law as discriminatory toward minority voters. So that was my latest love affair with the judiciary, with federal judges in Texas. So, well, last Thursday, a 3-judge panel in San Antonio unanimously ruled that lawmakers intentionally discriminated against minorities in crafting several legislative districts, which now must be redrawn ahead of the 2018 elections.
Right.
So apparently the House map in 2011 was struck down by the courts. So the courts drew a temporary map for 2012. And then Texas formally adopted that one with like a few slight changes in 2013. But the judges were unimpressed with this version of the map and struck that shit down on Thursday.
Right,
they were
right.
Like, no.
No.
They said it, quote, purposely maintained the intentional discrimination of the 2011 map.
Yeah, that's a lovely fuck you.
Yeah, the non-legal translation is, we fucking see you, assholes. We fucking see you. So, by the way, this ruling comes on the heels of another ruling that asserted that two of Texas's U.S. congressional districts were unconstitutional and also must be redrawn.
Right.
So in both the State House and the U.S. House rulings, the State Attorney General and noted dickwad,
yes,
Ken Paxton.
He really is a noted dickwad.
He shows up in these gratitude checks because he doth protest too much. So Ken Paxton has signaled that they intend to take this up to the Supreme Court.
Cool.
So, yeah. You know, that's... We'll have to see how that might conclude.
Right.
But I just love that dickwads in Texas have, like, really been racking up those L's. Like, they're just taking those L's. It's Paxton's 4th voting rights loss in 9 days.
That's really beautiful and vindicating.
Yeah. So the courts in Texas are having none of this bullshit.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it. And I hope they keep striking down more bullshit.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And then the second thing I'm grateful for is kind of... it's a little different than stories that I normally share, but
yeah.
I thought this was so cool. So there's a story in Politico about how free eyeglasses are boosting test scores in Baltimore.
I just have to say, when I read this article, I just cried.
I knew it was going to resonate with you because your education is a big policy issue,
yes,
for you.
Education's a huge policy for me. I've been wearing glasses my whole life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I always see you with contacts, so I didn't realize.
Yeah, but I've been wearing glasses my whole life.
Yeah.
And I can't even imagine being a kid who can't see properly and not having the means to fix that.
Yeah, so this is like this story, just to give it some context. So 3 years ago, Johns Hopkins researchers wanted to test and see if the gap between poorer students and wealthier students could be closed if they gave eyeglasses to the poorer students who need them. So they're trying to test out the reading proficiency gap.
Right.
They wanted to see if they can close this gap meaningfully through eyeglasses.
Right.
So amongst the small sample of second and third graders that they distributed eyeglasses to who needed them, researchers found that reading proficiency improved significantly among the group they gave eyeglasses to.
Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Which is so simple.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting that sometimes the best answer for certain, meaningful solutions,
yeah,
is so simple.
It's so simple.
It's right in front of you.
Right.
So because of this research, the Baltimore Health Department teamed up with the public school system, Johns Hopkins Wilmer Eye Institute, Johns Hopkins School of Education, Warby Parker.
That's great.
And a nonprofit called Vision to Learn. So they teamed up in May 2016 to create a 3-year program for the city called Vision for Baltimore. So they plan to visit 150 schools over the course of the program and screen 60,000 students. So it makes it the biggest study of its kind.
That's amazing.
And yeah, so the larger findings from the study really could have national ramifications.
Yes.
And that's what's really exciting about it, is that it could potentially show that reading proficiency gaps could be addressed, could be better addressed or supplementally addressed through healthcare solutions,
yeah,
as well as instructional ones.
That makes perfect sense. It's a pretty clear connection.
Yeah, For sure. And, you know, for example, in Maryland, state law requires vision screenings only for pre-K, first, and eighth graders. So theoretically, a kid could develop a vision issue in second grade and not receive the care they need until 6 years later.
Right.
So if there's not mandatory screenings at school, the parents might not be able to take them to the doctor or even be able to afford eyeglasses,
right.
for example.
Right.
You know, this political article noted that studies over the past decade suggest that students who perform badly in school are often misdiagnosed with behavioral disorders or special education needs when really they just can't see. The culprit is poor eyesight. It's so simple, and it's literally right in front of you.
Right, absolutely.
It's super interesting.
Yeah.
So Megan Collins, who's a lead researcher in this study, said, quote, "When the kids are wearing glasses and they're doing better, the attendance is higher and the standardized test scores have improved. Then you can really make the argument for why this needs to be built into what schools do."
Yeah.
So I just thought this story was a really cool example of a public-private partnership sort of like working to address a policy issue with science and data.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it really shows that these kind of programs can truly make a significant impact in a local community.
Well, yeah. And I feel like people, you know, education is one of those things that people talk about. It gets very touchy.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
when you talk about educating your kids, it gets mm-hmm. very touchy and people have opinions. But I feel like this is one thing where you can't really disagree. Like, you know, helping these kids, you know, if they helping diagnose these issues and addressing them,
right.
There's no downside.
I mean, yeah, it's a great way to go about trying to improve education policy. Okay, Devin, so let's get into some listener gratitude checks. So we have two today. The first one comes from Shauna via email. She said, quote, "I had the absolute joy and privilege to take a 2-week vacation to Glacier National Park, Yellowstone, and the Grand Tetons. One day we met a woman who teaches environmental biology in Cody, Wyoming, which is a super red city in a very red state. She is on the front lines, teaching climate change in a district where the school board didn't want a book in the classroom because it had been written by a black person."
Jesus fucking
Holy
Christ.
Shit. That is bananas.
Yes.
So she said, Shauna said, quote, "It's women like this in places like that who I have nothing but love and pride for. Their dedication, tenacity, guts, bravado, and power amaze me. They get up every day knowing that they are in the minority and will never really have power, and yet never cease to speak the truth."
That is beautiful.
That is an awesome story. And to the woman who is teaching climate change in a very red district, we fucking salute you.
Yes.
Keep it up.
It's hard, but necessary. So our next one comes via our Facebook group from Cindy. She said, quote, "I'm grateful that I could be part of a peaceful protest in San Francisco with thousands of other like-minded, loving people, and we ran those motherfucking Nazis out of town. They looked so pitiful with their tiny crowd of like 20 to 50 people. Being close to a big metropolis and able to participate in the march and chants felt cathartic, similar to the high after the women's march."
I love that people are continuing to show up.
Yes.
And stand up against
so important.
These far-right assholes, whether they be Nazis, whether they be just
White supremacists.
I mean, they're all kind of white supremacists.
Right.
But it's really, really heartening to see that people are standing up. You know, and we didn't even talk about this in a recent podcast, but in Boston,
yes,
something similar happened.
Right,
there was like thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people who really, really showed the fuck up against sort of more far right groups, and it's really cool to see citizens, you know, put words into action.
Yeah, and participate. So, thank you for your gratitude check, and thank you for counter protesting.
All right, Devin, so let's get to our dickwad of the week. And honestly, I feel like, I know this might sound like cheating, but I feel like it should be Donald Trump.
Well, yeah.
I mean, this has been I don't want to say banner week, because that has a positive connotation, but
right.
There have been high levels of dickwadery
right.
in many arenas.
I feel like we give it to him tacitly every week.
Every week, yeah.
You know, it's just sort of like, you're a dickwad.
Yeah.
But
he's the number one dickwad on top of the dickwad mountain.
Exactly.
So who's effectively our dickwad of the week, this week?
So it is Ryan Zinke.
Yes.
He is the Secretary of the Department of the Interior, and he is still trying to shrink four national monuments.
Yeah, we talked about this on a podcast like months ago. Yeah.
And this
shit is still happening.
Right, and it's definitely under the radar. I mean, there's a lot going on. Right. So I just want to call this motherfucker out by name.
Yes.
So he wants to open them to drilling and mining because of course he fucking does.
Yeah, so for a little context about what we're talking about. So in April, Trump ordered like a sweeping review of 27 national monuments that were designated or expanded in recent years under the Antiquities Act.
Right, which was signed by Theodore Roosevelt way back.
And the vast majority of the territory that Trump targeted for review, so about 553 million acres in all, that was set aside by Obama. So the vast majority. Again, we talked about this. I mean, his whole reason for being president seems to be trying to dismantle the legacy of Obama. That's the only guiding sort of quote unquote principle
right.
of Trump, right?
Well, and Mike Noel, who is a Republican state representative in Utah, applauded this decision by Trump and legitimately said the following quote in real life, and I can't make this up.
We did not make this up. Hand to heart, did not make this up.
We are not paraphrasing. Nope. This is a direct quote. Quote, "When you turn the management over to the tree huggers, the bird and bunny lovers, and the rock lickers, you turn your heritage over."
That feels like another dog whistle to me.
It totally does.
Because some of this land is some of the land that's in the crosshairs. So
yes.
One of the monuments that we've talked about is Bear's Ears.
Right.
And I mean, if we want to talk about taking away heritage, I mean, let's be real.
Yeah.
There were Native Americans on this land before white people ever got here.
Right.
And let's talk about what heritage our ancestors took away.
Exactly, exactly.
From them. And now this administration is trying to add insult to injury
right.
with this move.
Well, yeah. So Bear's Ears is currently in the crosshairs, and they want to shrink the national monument from 1.35 million acres to, wait for it, 160,000 acres.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's a big decrease.
That is a big, big decrease.
And, you know, Native American tribes in the Southwest, you know, they'd lobbied for years to get the Bear's Ears region designated as a national monument. And, you know, they want to push back and fight against the reduction of size. You know, Charles Wilkinson, who's a professor of public land law and an advisor to the tribes, said such a decision would, quote, be an attack on a significant part of the foundation of American conservation law. So Bear's Ears is named for two towering buttes, and it's just north of the Navajo reservation.
Right. So Al Yazzie, who is a Navajo from the tribe's Low Mountain chapter, said that the tribe had worked to win protection for the region, and he said, quote, "It is always and has been a spiritual place. It's the white people that came and tried to nullify that. And we had to fight to get it, to play the game the Western way, the government way, to have it reestablished as a national monument, as a sacred place for us. Now there's a stupid guy trying to take it away." We don't love the word stupid here, but that's how he put it.
That's what he said. And it is a horrible person trying to take it away. And like he said, we're trying to go through the proper channels.
Right.
In order to protect this land and to designate it as a national monument, now you're trying to take it away. Lest we forget about Ryan Zinke,
right.
who was our Dickwad of the Week winner. He is the one that called Lisa Murkowski and the other senator from Alaska and told them that if Lisa Murkowski, or if they both, didn't vote for healthcare,
right.
there would be ramifications on other funding and stuff
right, for Alaska. Right.
Lisa Murkowski promptly voted no and basically told him to go fuck himself.
Exactly.
So Ryan Zinke, he is our dickwad of the week.
Yeah.
This is a story we're going to continue, I think, to keep our eyes on
yes.
and track. Because again, like Devin said, it's flying below the radar, but it has a lot of implications.
Right.
Like you said at the top of this,
right.
they're trying to essentially take away this land
right.
so that they can use it for drilling and mining.
Mining, right.
For business-related reasons.
Exactly.
And it's bullshit. Okay, Devin, so it's the end of the show, and as always, we have action items, and we have a pretty full list today. So what do we have so far?
Okay, so first, you can read Trump's whole transgender service member ban. Mm-hmm. It's posted on Lambda Legal's website, and we'll link to it. And while you're there, donate to Lambda Legal. They have, like we said earlier, committed to taking Trump to court over this issue and, you know, need support.
Yeah, they're definitely a worthy cause, again, to continue to support.
There is also a march from Charlottesville to D.C. from today, August 28th, to Wednesday, September 6th.
Yeah, I saw this.
This is a massive march, and, you know, they're covering a lot of miles over a lot of time. So you can donate to the cause at youcaring.com/thepeoplescortiumforhumanandcivilrights-194108.
It's -914108.
Okay.
I just noticed it.
Yeah, okay. So
we're going to link to it.
We're going to link to it.
It's a long link, but in case you want to go to it right now.
Right. And so basically they're using this march to call out the racism and white supremacy highlighted by the Charlottesville terrorist attacks and the Trump administration's non-response to the situation.
The non-response, the bullshit response.
Right. Whatever you want to call it. So they're literally marching the whole distance. So you can sign up to do so with them at actionnetwork.org/forms/march-with-us. Again, we'll link to this in the show notes, but in case you want to go now. Each day is broken down by how many miles they will travel. And you can sign up for all of the days or some of them, and they have the whole route laid out on their website.
Yeah.
And if you can't march for any reason, you can also meet them in D.C. at the end of the march on September 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also sign the petition of support. And I'm not going to read it because it's really long.
It's a long URL, but we'll put it on the website.
Yes.
The third action item we have is around the DACA news. So we talked earlier in the show about how Trump is looking to probably end DACA by some means. So United We Dream is an organization that we've referenced a few times on the show, and they have an infographic with five things to know about if DACA is repealed. And so this is aimed at people who might be DACA recipients. So DACA is still in effect, despite all the reports that it might not be. So right now, DACA is in effect. And United Will Dream is committed to fighting Trump to keep the program alive. So if you're currently abroad with advanced parole, they say to come back immediately.
Yeah.
That you need to come back. Also beware of fraud and scams. And then they also advise to keep a copy of your DACA permit in your wallet or on your person.
Yeah.
So have it with you at all times. And then just for everyone else, whether you're in DACA or not, you can text Defend DACA to 877-877 to get text alerts from United We Dream. And they send occasional updates on how to fight back, like signing petitions or going to events. They're really great. I've signed up for their text alerts. I really highly recommend you do it. So it's you text Defend DACA to 877-877, and it's a great service.
Mm-hmm. We also have some ways you can help with Hurricane Harvey relief. There are tons of ways to help, but you know, we're hearing that it's money that they really need.
Yeah, we've heard that money is the best thing you can donate.
Right.
But they're also looking for blood donations, mm-hmm. Food, and volunteer hours. And Huffington Post was an amazing resource in
this.
Have a great roundup. We'll link to the full thing again on our show notes. But here's just a couple of organizations that we're going to highlight.
Yeah. So the first one is the Red Cross, which is redcross.org. You can also text Harvey to 90999 to automatically make a $10 donation.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
So that's to the Red Cross?
Yes, that's the Red Cross. So Harvey to 90999.
Yeah.
And then there's the Texas Diaper Bank.
Yeah, I've seen that go around.
Mm-hmm.
There's a need for diapers.
Yep, texasdiaperbank.org, and you can donate money or diapers there.
And then there's also Portlight, which focuses on helping the elderly and disabled. So that's portlight.org. And then finally, the SPCA of Texas. So it's spca.org. /news_hurricane-harvey. And that's, they have a list of animals in need of temporary or permanent homes. And then you can also donate to them directly there.
Right.
So again, like we said, money seems to be what we hear is most helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on the ground, blood, I think, is needed.
Yes.
And volunteer hours.
Right.
If you're around the area. But yeah, I mean, it's a big thing happening right
yes.
now. A lot of people are, hurting.
Hurting and displaced.
Displaced. Their homes are gone.
Yep.
It's a really scary time. And so to all of our Hellions who are affected, we're really thinking of you.
Yeah.
And we hope you stay safe.
Yes. So that is it for us. We've packed show. I mean, I feel like we say that every
time. I know.
Time.
We say it every time. We really need to find a new way to be like, Trump is making us talk about all kinds of bullshit.
Yeah, seriously. And so we might... We'll keep you updated on Thursday
and
what's going on.
We'll probably be back on Thursday. If I'm not involved, we will have a guest host.
Yes.
Regardless, we'll probably have a guest host.
Yes.
But we need to figure a few things out ahead of time. So if we're not back on Thursday, again, next month, Monday is Labor Day, so we're going to have a show on Tuesday. So we're taking Monday off. But thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us, and we'll see you next time.
For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HellbentPod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/HellbentPodcast. We also have a fan group called Dickwads Be Gone, which you can find on Facebook.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/HellbentPodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent. Thank you.